Good morning. You're listening to The Beacon. Happy balmy and tropical Saturday morning to you.
Yes, happy. What you said, Saturday morning.
It feels like I could just lay out by the lake, get a little suntan.
Well, I don't know about suntan.
Not quite there yet.
Not quite there. But we should be fairly warm in the 30s. It's expected to get up to about maybe 33 degrees today.
Which feels downright tropical after mm-hmm. the cold snap that we've had for the last, I don't know, couple months. I mean, we've had a pretty good drive of cold weather.
Yeah.
That's okay. I love it.
The coming week, we should see some more temperatures in the 40s and high 30s. Now, there was another story in the news. You might remember we talked about it several weeks ago, even months maybe. We talked about how individuals were suing big box stores because their websites weren't accessible. And now that whole movement has gone in a different direction. They are suing famous celebrities because their websites aren't accessible. Like Pharrell Williams, he's being sued over his website because it's not accessible.
Huh.
And he has a clothing line, Billionaire Boys Club and Ice Cream. And they're sold on sites that don't have the software that makes them audible to the visually impaired, according to a lawsuit filed by Victor Lopez, who sued more than 20 other companies, including the jeweler Dom and cosmetics company Lalique, over the same issue. And so that's something that's going on. So this is something that people who are visually impaired are very serious about. They want to make sure that they have the same access as everyone else, and they should.
Well, absolutely. And if nothing else, hopefully this brings an awareness to the people who are developing these websites that they do need to be all-inclusive. So, mm-hmm. I think a huge problem out there is that when people have never met a blind person or never met a deaf person or has no awareness of the need for accessibility, it's not on their radar. Now, that's not in defense of them, because I feel like we live in a day and age where you put it on your radar. Like, there's enough out there in the world that we need to have. If we have no awareness that there's people with special needs out there that require accessibility requirements, then you're living in a bubble, and you need to pop that bubble and get involved with the real world, because otherwise you're doing a disservice to a huge majority of the population. So, you know, I think them hopefully bringing these lawsuits, bringing an awareness to them so that they do cooperate and move forward mindfully when they have these projects that they're doing. If they are met with resistance, then that just aggravates me to no end, because there's no reason to resist providing access to everybody.
And another way that folks with disabilities are being denied access in many ways, and this is really important, not that being able to shop online isn't, but in terms of voting, many people with disabilities have trouble casting their ballots. So today we have an interview. Sandra did an interview with Michelle Bishop, and she's a voting rights specialist for the National Disability Rights Network. And she'll discuss the many options that allow voters with disabilities to cast their ballots, especially now that we're coming into an election cycle.
The midterm election. Yeah. And people want to have a voice in this election, for sure. And that's, you know, that's tremendously important, especially because the current administration wants to dismantle some of the restrictions of the ADA, some of the laws in place that the ADA has offered people with disabilities. Mm-hmm. The government currently in office wants to try and dismantle some of those so that businesses do not need to abide by the ADA as strictly as they have been required to. So it's tremendously important for people, especially with disabilities, to get out and vote and make their voices heard, because that could be a difference between, you know, I mean, that could be a quality of life issue. It's, again, I feel pretty, it's traumatic that we are in a place where it's even on the table, that it's even on the ballot, but we are. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we need to make sure that the accessibility options are available so that everybody has a right to vote and have their voices heard.
Yes, and we definitely need to do that. So let's get everything underway. Of course, we have all the usual segments. We've got Sandy and Brett and what they feel is highly recommended for this week. And the off actor, good news, and Luke's Laboratory with Juan Suarez. All of those things coming up on the other side of this break. This is The Beacon here on WCPT 820 AM.
Hi, everyone. This is Alex Trebek, the host of Jeopardy. If your question is, how can someone who is blind enjoy the latest magazine writing and not have to pay a penny? Then the answer is Choice Magazine Listening. Every other month, we'll send you hours of stimulating, unabridged articles, short stories, and poetry from writers such as Russell Baker, Derek Walcott, Joyce Carol Oates, Bill Moyers, and Margaret Atwood. These free special speed cassettes are sent to anyone unable to read because of physical limitations. If you're interested, write today to Listening, Box 10, Port Washington, New York, 11050. We'll also tell you how to get the necessary free Library of Congress talking book player. So write Listening, Box 10, Port Washington, New York, 11050. Or call 516-883-8280. That's 516-883-8280. Thank you.
Well, everyone, 2018 is a decisive year here in the United States. It's election year. And, you know, millions of voters with disabilities still experience various accessibility issues while out in the polling places and when casting their vote. Joining us this morning to talk more about this important topic is Michelle Bishop, who is a voting rights specialist at the National Disability Rights Network in Washington. Michelle, thank you and good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
And now, Michelle, we know that, you know, legislation like the Help America Vote Act and even technology has increased, you know, the ways, the accessibility for voters with disabilities. You know, there's assistive technology that can be used and other accessibility accommodations for people with disabilities to vote independently. Can you talk a little bit about those types of services and accommodations that are available?
Absolutely. There are so many options for voters with disabilities to make sure that you're able to cast your ballot. First and foremost, the Help America Vote Act actually guarantees everyone the right to a private and an independent ballot. Mm-hmm. So you should be able to cast your ballot completely on your own without assistance.
Sure.
And in a way that's private for you. Mm-hmm. So that you don't have to share your vote. And that's really the best guarantee that we have in terms of access for people with disabilities. It also talks very specifically about how every polling place has to have at least one accessible voting system. So if you've ever gone into your polling place and seen a bunch of people hand-marking a paper ballot, there has to be at least one device you can use electronically to help you mark that ballot if you can't do that on your own with privacy and independence. The Americans with Disabilities Act and prior to that, the Voting Accessibility Act for the Elderly and the Handicapped also have a lot to say about ensuring that our polling places themselves are actually accessible. So wherever you're going to vote, it should be compliant with the ADA. It should have, you know, ramps for stairs and all of those things, or elevators that are functioning and unlocked for you to be able to use. There should be enough space for anyone to be able to move around once they get inside the polling place. But also some of those things that would be covered by HAVA, the Help America Vote Act, like making sure that the machines are set up in a way where no one's passing behind you if you're using a touchscreen when you're voting. Mm-hmm. So that you have that privacy and they can't see how you're voting. So the federal law really actually has a lot to say about the accessibility of the process, which is surprising because most of our laws around elections are state laws.
Mm-hmm.
Federal law actually doesn't typically get that involved in elections, but they have really stepped in when it comes to making that process accessible for everyone. So there are a lot of rights and guarantees that you have. If for any reason you can't cast your ballot completely independently, you also have the right to bring anyone you want with you to the polls to assist you to vote, and that actually comes from the Voting Rights Act. Now, this excludes your employer or your union rep for obvious reasons that they have some power over you there to kind of say who you can or can't vote for. But other than that, anyone else, they don't have to be also voting. They don't have to be registered to vote. They don't have to be a citizen. They don't have to speak English. They don't have to be over the age of 18. Anyone you're comfortable with assisting you. If you don't have anyone to bring with you, the poll workers are actually required to help you. Now, they'll probably send one Democrat and one Republican to assist you and make sure that nothing tricky is being done. But if you need assistance, you have the right to that as well. Other than that, it's really important to know what the rules are in your state. Since, like I said earlier, most of the laws around voting are determined at the state level, there are usually a lot of additional options for people with disabilities that they may not know about. In a lot of places, you can vote curbside. Mm-hmm. But if you can get to your polling place but you can't get inside, say you drive there and there's no curb cuts for you to get up on the curb, or you have to go downstairs and there's no elevator or no ramp, they actually would have to bring the ballot to you outside. And that is an option in a number of states. You can also, in a lot of places, vote from home. Mm-hmm. That might be voting an absentee ballot. Mm-hmm. That might be a permanent absentee list that exists in some places where they'll automatically mail you an absentee ballot before every election. If you go to your polling place and there's a really long line, some places will move you up to the front of the line if you can't stand for that long, or they might even just bring you a chair to help you wait it out. So there are a lot of options. There's also a lot going on right now with things like early voting, where there may be a two-week period that you have to cast your ballot. And in some cases, that includes something like a vote center, where you don't have to go to your local polling place if it's not accessible to you. You have a couple weeks, or maybe even just a few days, to go to this vote center, which ideally is going to be one of the more accessible locations. So there's so many options for people with disabilities. The important thing is just to reach out, whether it's to your local election authority or your protection and advocacy, to find out what those options are and what you need to help you plan to vote and go and cast your ballot on election day.
Yeah, and, you know, as you mentioned, all the accessibility and other accommodations that are offered are great, but unfortunately, there are still accessibility challenges for people with disabilities. On a personal note, as a lot of our listeners know, I am completely blind. And I know that for me, Michelle, when I go to vote, I use the machine with audio access. But, you know, every time I am nervous that either the workers won't know how to, you know, set it up or that it won't be functioning properly. What are some of the accessibility challenges that people with disabilities have faced that you're aware of when voting?
You're right. You're absolutely right. Challenges still exist. Despite the fact that the Americans with Disabilities Act is almost 30 years old and HAVA is over 15 years old, all polling places are still not accessible. Mm-hmm. And this is something we know because it's been studied. The U.S. Government Accountability Office has actually independently studied this and taken a look at our polling places to see where they are. We've come a long way. They've improved a lot.
Sure.
But the majority of polling places are still not completely accessible. So that's still a big problem. That's getting better, the polling place itself. Where we're seeing more problems is one of the things that you mentioned, that the accessible voting technology itself, in terms of how we're using it, is getting worse. We're finding that it's less likely to be set up and turned on. Mm-hmm. It's less likely to be positioned in a way that's both private and accessible for a wheelchair. It's less likely to have a headset out and ready for you to use if you need to use an audio ballot. So we're still seeing some barriers. And I'm so glad you mentioned something really specific that far and away is the most common thing we hear, mm-hmm. that really accessibility on election day comes down to the poll workers. The poll workers have to feel confident with the assistive technology that's there for you, getting it set up and telling you how to use it or assisting you to use it if it's something you're not familiar with. The poll workers also, they have to know what your rights are when you go to the polls, so that if they are supposed to be bringing you a curbside ballot or any of those other accommodations that you're entitled to, maybe letting whoever you brought with you assist you to vote, they have to be aware of those things so that that process goes smoothly and people aren't being denied those rights. And that's not always happening. Being a poll worker is a really hard job, and they get very little training, and there's so much that they're required to remember. So we're still really struggling to see progress there. We've made a lot of progress, but I think we still have a long way to go. And I think that voters are really important in that process because we need to hear from voters stories like yours, what's happening when you go to the polls, so that we can help advocate around that and keep breaking those barriers down.
Oh, absolutely. Very important. And, you know, earlier you mentioned paper ballots. many states are turning towards paper ballots, you know, because of the privacy and other concerns. Now, for people without disabilities that might not be aware, what are some of the accessibility challenges that paper ballots present to people with disabilities?
So paper ballots, like you said, are very much on the rise right now. There's so much talk about election security and cybersecurity, mostly because there's a lot of really confusing stuff on the news right now that talks about foreign interference or election hacking, and no one's really explaining what did or didn't happen around the 2016 elections and how secure our elections really are. So the number one proposed solution for election security has been paper ballots. Mm-hmm. And to an extent, I get it. If you have that paper record that you can always go back to and you can recount it or you can audit it, there's a sense of security that comes with that. And it kind of takes the internet out of the process, right? The fear that if we're using these electronic machines to help mark our ballots, that they're somehow can be tapped into from the internet, which may or may not be true. They're not typically connected to the internet. But that's generating a lot of fear and discomfort, and it's pushing some solutions forward that really rely on paper ballots. The problem is that we're not having a conversation nationally about what that means for voters with disabilities, because a paper ballot is just a hand-marked paper ballot. It's never going to be accessible for everyone. Mm-hmm. And I think that part of it is really easy for people to grasp. If I am blind, how do I read and mark that piece of paper? Mm. If I don't have use of my hands, how do I independently mark that piece of paper? So it's something that in a very physical, very real way, it's easy for people to grasp that this doesn't work for everyone. But we need to start having conversations about, so then what is the solution? If we're going to say we have to go to paper ballots, how are we going to make that accessible for everyone? Because we can't have elections that aren't secure and accurate, but we also can't have elections that disenfranchise people with disabilities. That's just, to me, un-American. Mm-hmm. The vote has to be accessible to everyone. So I'd love to see some solutions where we can really leverage technology, because as you mentioned really early on, technology is changing the lives of people with disabilities, and it's making the world so much more accessible and so many more things possible. So I want to see systems that are secure, even if they're paper ballot based, and also provide full accessibility. I don't like when I see systems where I have to take a ballot and try to insert it into the machine on my own, which not everyone can do, and then it spits back out my marked ballot, and the poll worker has to come and take it out for me, and they have these privacy sleeves, which is really just a glorified folder, to go and insert my ballot into the ballot scanner. That's not independent, and it's a threat to our privacy of our votes. I'm not okay with that. Mm-hmm. I also, with systems there, you can mark your ballot independently. I also want you to be able to verify your vote. Everyone should be able to see if that piece of paper is what's going to be counted. Everyone should be able to say what's on that piece of paper is what I actually intended to vote. And I think technology is making that possible. Things like optical character recognition, where you can take a picture of a printed page and it can read it back to you. I mean, there's an iPhone app that can do that. Mm-hmm. So there's no way you can tell me that voting equipment couldn't do that, so that everyone, regardless of their disability, can cast and verify their ballot independently, so that we can also have the same level of security that non-disabled voters expect. So I think it's increasingly possible to make these paper ballot systems work, but it's going to take a real commitment. And the thing that I think has really been the problem is that it's going to take some money from Congress to fund researching and developing that and making it happen.
Now, Michelle, where can people find out more about the National Disability Rights Network or about the rights of voters with disabilities?
Sure. Well, the easiest way to find out more is probably to visit our website, www.ndrn.org. We do have a page on there that talks about voting, and it should have some basic information for you that talks about, you know, some of the federal laws that I mentioned that guarantee your privacy and your independence and provide for accessibility. The best thing you can do is probably talk to your protection and advocacy agency. And if you go to our website, ndrn.org, you can actually click on Find Help in Your State, and it'll give you a full listing. And once you find your PNA, they can talk to you really specifically about what state laws provide certain options for you in terms of assistance or accommodation. And they can also work with you one-on-one to help you make a plan to vote that's really individualized to your situation. depending on what your disability is or what kind of barriers you faced in terms of your polling place or your jurisdiction. And I really think it all comes down to making a plan to vote and knowing before Election Day how you're going to get it done in a way that works for you. And I think your PNA is a great resource for helping you think that through. So I would definitely recommend checking out our website, but also don't be afraid to call your PNA and talk to them about your vote.
That was Michelle Bishop, who is a voting rights specialist at the National Disability Rights Network. Michelle, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you so much. It was my pleasure. Anytime.
This is the Lighthouse Beacon. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Erica Borgren, Iraq veteran and director of the Illinois Department of Veterans Affairs. Our mission is to empower veterans and their families to thrive. Our agency is home to a team of veterans whose sole job is to help other veterans. But we can't do this work alone. We need Illinois veterans to stand up and be counted so we can better understand and serve our veteran community. You have already stood up to answer the call to service. Now, stand up and be counted to help the entire veteran community. Visit veterans.illinois.gov.
Are you mixing over there? Are you an improv mixer?
DJ? I don't know where that came from.
DJ B. Hawkins?
That's definitely something new. I've never DJed or something. And people can't see me, but, you know, like a disc jockey, not a disc jockey,
like a
but
club DJ.
A club DJ. They'll have two turntables and they'll have records.
Two turntables now, and a microphone.
Now I guess it's CDs, and now they don't even have that. But
it's
in the olden
now.
Days, they'd have two old-time turntables with records on them, and they would basically manipulate the records with both hands, and I was sort of mimicking that movement.
He was.
And I don't know why.
Ever in my 10 years of knowing you, I've never seen you do anything remotely close to that. That was fun. I enjoyed that. Thank you.
Well, I'm sure there'll be more things if we keep going that you haven't seen that I've done.
I'm sure. I look forward to it.
Yes. Yeah. And I'll tell you what else is coming. And Brett and Sandy and Brett, and their highly recommended segment, and we'll find out what they're talking about.
Hello, everyone. I am Sandy Murillo.
And I am Brett Shishkoff.
And we are here with a new edition of It's Highly Recommended.
You actually had a chance to go to the theater this week.
And, you know, Brett, I myself made it on Saturday to the play that the American Theater did in conjunction with the Chicago Lighthouse. You know, we went to see We Are Gonna Be Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I have to give a lot of, I have to give kudos to the American Theater Company.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you, Brett, I know it's been a while, you know, about a year and a half ago, but we went to the Xanadu performance that was also at the American Theater Company. I'm sure that you...
Yeah, that was actually my first show that I saw starting my job here at the Lighthouse.
Really?
Yeah, that was my first performance, was Xanadu over at the American Theater Company. And at that point, they only had a touch tour.
Exactly. And, you know, Brett, with this performance of We're Gonna Be Okay, it was both a touch tour and an audio-described performance.
Yeah, how'd they do?
You know, they did outstanding. The accessibility... You know, I think everything was well coordinated.
Mm-hmm.
For those of you that might not be aware of how touch tours work, you know, basically, those of us who are blind or visually impaired, we get to walk around the stage so that we get a better sense of, you know, the size of the stage, the shape of the stage, and we get to feel the different props, the costumes, you know, everything that... the sighted audience can see, we get to experience it, you know, get to feel it, so that way we can get a better sense, you know, when the play is going on,
mm-hmm.
of what the characters are wearing, what props they are using. And we also got to hear from the actresses themselves, because in this case, it was all actresses.
Okay.
You know, even the male characters were played by actresses. This was something that was unique for me. I had never experienced a play like this.
Yeah, and I know that both me and you kind of talked about that sometimes it's hard to determine who's the male character and who's the female character when they cast like that. It does make things a little bit harder. Because I've seen a play like that also at the American Theater Company, and there were certain parts that it was hard to wrap your mind around, you know, okay, who's speaking? So I know you kind of voiced that same concern or whatnot. I think that was kind of your only, not really complaint, but just note that it just made it a little bit harder to follow.
And, you know, Brad, it helped that the actresses, they all introduced themselves, mm-hmm. and that way I could get a better idea of their voice.
Right.
They said a few of the lines that they were going to perform.
Mm-hmm.
But there were some times that I would get lost. It might take me a few seconds or even a couple minutes to really start following again, mm-hmm. you know, which character was speaking. And I do have to say that in that case, the audio description did help to a certain extent.
Mm-hmm.
Martin Wilde was our audio describer, and he does an awesome job.
Yeah, he's great.
And, you know, when he would say, Efren is speaking, Efren was one of the male characters.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so simple cues like that helped me get a better idea of, like, okay, now this character is speaking, or now Elaine is speaking, or whatever the character,
mm-hmm.
you know, was speaking. That helped a lot. But, you know, Brett, even among some of the sighted people that went to see the play, they also said that they experienced that confusion in certain parts of the play.
Oh, okay.
So, at least to me, that shows that making plays accessible, it helps us get the same experience, you know, whether that be good or bad or whether it can improve. I think that, to me, that also shows that, you know, the play was accessible,
mm-hmm.
and it helped me, I guess, if you will, get a full picture of what
right.
the play was.
That's good. Yeah. So you would say that you enjoyed your experience over at the American Theater Company?
Oh, very much so. I do have to send a special shout out to Emma Palermo and Will Davis and all of their staff and the actresses. Everyone did a great job. As far as the play itself, it gave all of us a better perspective of some of the uncertainty that people felt in the 1960s with the missile crisis and, you know, how people were so worried that they wanted to build bomb shelters in their mm-hmm. backyards. And so some of the stuff we've seen, you know, nowadays, Brett, with all the things going on in the world, you know, I think that a lot of that fear, it also resonates with what we are living at the moment.
Oh, you're talking
like North Korea.
Mm-hmm, okay.
And, you know, the different politics. So that, I think, to me, that gave me somewhat of a better perspective of the fear that has been experienced throughout history with similar situations. You know, moving on, Brett, I know that you watched a very interesting movie recently as well.
Yeah, I actually, we like to talk about the different streaming services, Amazon and Netflix, and we haven't really touched on what Amazon has to offer with their audio description content. So I decided to watch one of the movies that actually, I believe, was nominated for an award. I'm not sure if it won an award for drama. It's called The Big Sick, and it's dealing with a stand-up comedian who is of like Muslim faith, and his family is trying to set him up with someone of the same religion, and he isn't really interested, and he ends up falling in love with an American girl.
Hmm.
So it ends up eventually, there's something that happens that definitely kind of, you think, oh, things are going to work out for the best, and it doesn't actually go that way.
Huh.
And so the movie itself kind of throws lots of twists and turns at you that you actually start to think that this isn't a normal romantic comedy movie where everybody ends up being happy at the end. But it's still a good movie, and I still felt good at the end of it, even though it didn't end exactly the way that you would think most romantic comedies would
sure.
end. So it's a fun one. It's definitely, like, if you're a couple and you're looking for a romantic movie, it's very well done. I enjoyed it. There was definitely some parts that I laughed at. I would say that there is some rough humor in there because they are stand-up comedians, so there are some parts when you're watching the stand-up comedians and they are a little vulgar at times.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say it's more adult-based.
Sure.
But still, very, very good movie. It's one that I highly recommend.
Oh, well, I'll have to check it out. And, you know, everyone, there you have it. Movie recommendation from Brett, as well as my review of We Are Gonna Be Okay.
And you are actually listening to The Lighthouse Beacon. I am Brett Shishkoff.
And I am Sandy Murillo.
The Lighthouse Endowment Campaign is an ongoing campaign to help secure the future of the Chicago Lighthouse for the 67,000-plus patients, clients, and families that utilize our services each year.
Yeah, I have an undergrad from DePaul Computer Information Systems and a master's in Business Information Technology. And I know I have a disability, and it can be challenging trying to get a position. You know, they want to hire someone with a disability. So that was one of the challenges I had also. Going to a job interview and people look at you strange because you have a disability. I've gotten frowned at. They'll say, we'll call you or we'll consider, but it never happened. The Lighthouse has provided me with employment. I've been here since 2013, November. I've grown. I transitioned from Illinois Tollway to UI Health. The Lighthouse is awesome. They really work with people with disability, visually impaired, and veterans, get employment, you know, find employment, because the percentage of people with disability is unemployed is extremely high. People that have degrees and they still can't find a job. So the Lighthouse is very supportive in helping them find employment. One word, I say awesome.
Historically, our endowment fund has helped maintain critical programs on the verge of shutting down, preserve jobs in times of economic stress, and meet the growing demand for vision care services among America's aging population. To make a contribution, please contact Jennifer Miller, 312-997-3643.
I'm Lainey Kleeman, along here with my friend
Brian Hawkins.
We have a lot of stuff going on the show today.
Yes, we do.
It's great. We've got some Lions Club things that are back in rotation, which we haven't heard from the Lions Club in a long time.
Yeah, our friend Lion Richard Carlson sent me some emails letting me know about some of the events that they have going on. And the first one is February 25th, and that's at the Bridgeview Community Center at 79th and Oketo Avenue. And this one, my favorite, starts off with All You Can Eat. I like that sort of catches your eye here. And what you'll be eating if you go, it's a pancake breakfast with Olaf, Elsa, and Anna. $6 for adults, $4 for kids, 4 through 12.
Those are characters from Frozen, for those of us who are not Disney competent.
Oh.
Yes, those are characters from... Did you know that? Or were you just reading it?
Well, they do have the pictures of those characters, and I know that they're from Frozen, but I didn't mention that. Thank you.
Well, there you go. So yes. It's very kid friendly, obviously.
Yeah, and not you know, more so than you know. Kids under 3 eat free.
Yeah.
And there's also a coloring contest and pictures with Olaf, Elsa, and Anna. And so there's also raffle prizes, and it'll be fun for all. So limit of one ticket per student. So they'll be serving pancakes, sausage, coffee, tea, and hot chocolate. And tickets are available at the door or from any Bridgeview Lion Club. Yeah. So you can go there. And All You Can Eat, those are my two favorite things. The other thing is Buy One, Get One, and All You Can Eat.
Buy One, Get One, and All You Can Eat.
Yes.
Those are some good buzzwords for sure.
Yes, I like to test myself to see how many pancakes I can eat. I've lost track. Now, the next thing that's going on, in March, it starts off with a bang. You know how they say March comes in?
Like a lion. Lion and goes out like a lamb.
Yeah.
Yes.
Depending on if it's cold or not. Well, forget about the weather. This month is going to come in like a lion because there are events that take place on the 1st, the 3rd, and the 4th. And the first event, which takes place March 1st, which is a Thursday. And that's the Chicago Lighthouse presents Poker and Casino Night. So they're raising the stakes for Vision.
Great.
Yes. So if you are a person who likes to play poker and other casino games, this is perfect for you. It takes place at Gibson Steakhouse, Hugo's Frog Bar, 1024 North Rush Street in Chicago. And the proceeds will support the world-class programs and services of the Chicago Lighthouse North and Glenview for people of all ages in the north and northwest suburbs who are blind, visually impaired, disabled, and veterans. Now, early bird prices, and these prices won't be available after February 19th. That's $150 for casino guests, $200 for poker players. And if you wait until the night of the event and you go there, then those prices will increase by $50. But as I said, you'll be able to play casino games, Texas Hold'em Poker. There's a tournament. There's also premium cocktails, Gibson's signature dinner and desserts, and over $20,000 in prizes.
Wow.
Imagine that. Now, the grand prize is a $10,000 seat at the World Series of Poker main event. So if you fancy yourself a sharp poker player and you win that and you go down there and you compete, who knows how much you could win.
So the prize is actually competing in the poker tournament, in the world champion, not just going to watch, but no. To actually compete. Wow, that's
yes.
Fancy and
mm-hmm.
Fun.
Now, and don't worry, if you're a beginner poker player, you don't be intimidated because they will have lessons for you.
Fun.
I think they start about 6:15. Now, the doors open at 5:30, but the cards fly at 7 p.m. So you want to contact Lindsay Inglis at Lindsay, L-I-N-D-S-A-Y dot I-N-G-L-I-S at ChicagoLighthouse.org, and she'll be able to set you up with everything that you need in order to get there and show how good you are.
Cool. That sounds like a lot of fun.
Yes.
Are you a poker player?
No.
No.
I've been thinking about it. I'm more of a blackjack player myself. That's my claim to fame.
Yeah.
But Texas Hold'em, it's certainly an interesting game with to watch. And so I've seen it on television a lot. So maybe one day I'll make that transition over into poker.
Seems like a natural transition.
Yes. Now, of course, we've got a couple of other events. And March the 3rd, 6 to 11 p.m., the Chicago Northwest Lions Club will be hosting a corned beef and cabbage feast. And I love corned beef and cabbage.
We'll hit up the feast, my friend.
Yes, and this is the Garden Terrace West at 6330 West Irving Park Road in Chicago. And 6 p.m., they start off with cocktails, and the feast begins at 7 p.m., and there's free beer.
What?
With your dinner.
Wow.
Yeah. There's also music, dancing, and waffles, and it's 37...
Waffles?
Not waffles, I'm sorry. Raffles.
Oh, my God. You had me at waffles. I was buying in at that point.
And then it says 37 dots, so I guess that's $37 per person.
That makes sense.
And it's RSVP by 2/23/18. Reserved seating only, no walk-ins. No.
Don't you walk in.
No. So you want to email Lion Linda Nielsen at L Nielsen, NILSSON47 at hotmail.com, and she'll get you set up. Now, the next day, Sunday, there is a PDG Bob Block and Lion Brenda. They will host a spaghetti dinner, and that's the Knights of Columbus Hall at 17800 Lorenz Avenue in Lansing, Illinois, 2 to 6 p.m., $15 per person. There's a cash bar, and there's games, fun, and fellowship, and they want you to make reservations by February 28th. And you can call Lion Brenda Block at 219-616-7627. That's 219-616-7627. And you can have a good time with spaghetti dinner. That's something else that I love, spaghetti. And that's hosted by the Calumet City Lions Club. They're inviting you out to for that.
Well, now I'm just hungry, Brian.
Well, it's early in the morning. All we can offer right now is coffee. But yes, I'm hungry, too.
I'm excited for pancakes later, I think.
Corned beef, pancakes, spaghetti. I'll take any of it.
Waffles. We'll go with it.
Yes, but for right now. in lieu of food, something to feed the soul.
Very nice. Lovely.
We have the awe factor, Lainey's uplifting story for the week.
Thank you. George Dakin Jr. had been walking down the sidewalk when he suddenly went into cardiac arrest and fell to the ground. His heart stopped before he even hit the pavement. So, like, widowmaker, cardiac arrest, you know, essentially dead before he hit the ground. And for 28 minutes, he was dead. He's still alive to tell the story, though, thanks to a homeless man who had been drinking coffee near the spot where he had collapsed. Fortunately, Dakin had a heart attack. He was in the right place at the right time for a heart attack. He collapsed in front of Champ Homes Incorporated, which is a faith-based shelter for homeless people in transitional housing. They're based in Massachusetts. And a gentleman by the name of Austin Davis was inside the building when he heard someone outside scream for help. Now, Davis had only just received CPR training a couple of days prior. And so it was fresh in his mind. You know, after you spend a bit of time without CPR training, you sort of forget what you're supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
But this happened just a couple of days after he had received his CPR training. He ran over to Dakin's motionless body and started giving chest compressions. He was conducting CPR for 10 minutes before the paramedics arrived. 10 minutes. And CPR by yourself for 10 minutes is a very strenuous activity. Ambulances, paramedics arrived and brought Dakin to the hospital. He had suffered 100% blockage in his LAD artery. This condition has been called the widowmaker, and because it is almost always fatal. After 18 more minutes of CPR and defibrillator shocks, the paramedics were finally able to get a pulse on Dakin. Like, I didn't even realize that they went 28 minutes, because I think if you go 16 minutes or something without oxygen to the brain, you're essentially brain damaged or brain dead.
I think it's less than that.
Yeah, yeah. So
I think it's only like 2 minutes or something.
It's crazy. It's crazy. So the fact that they worked on him for as long as they did, for 28 minutes, and then got a pulse, and now he's alive to tell about it, is kind of like mind-blowing to me. And they say that no one could believe it. The ambulance paramedics didn't believe it. The doctors didn't believe it. They said if you're in the hospital and you have an LAD blockage in the hospital, you don't survive it, let alone being out on the street and having a citizen do chest compressions for 10 minutes and then, you know, another 18 minutes of CPR and defibrillator shocks. So so as a means of thanking Davis for helping to save their father, who would have died if Davis hadn't been there, we would have died. They did send up a GoFundMe page to raise money for the homeless man. I have not been able to look at it because the Wi-Fi in here doesn't work. So whenever I click on it, it just shuts me out of the internet. So I am going to look at it and see, you know, hopefully that they've been able to do something nice with the GoFundMe and that there's a substantial amount to help this homeless man, you know, get on his feet again after saving this man's life. Jody Dakin has said that Austin, who is the homeless man, is not a drinker. He doesn't do drugs. He's always very well put together. He has a lovely personality, and she says, I know that he can rise above the situation with our help. He is doing everything right to escape his circumstantial homelessness, but the hurdle is tremendous, and odds of escaping homelessness are about as bleak as walking away from a heart attack. That's what the quote says. So, you know, the fact that he was able to survive a heart attack means that maybe there's a good chance that our friend Austin Davis can escape homelessness. So it actually does say that the family has been able to raise $15,000, which is being spent on a car for Mr. Davis, the security deposit and rent for an apartment, health insurance, and gas cards, which can help him get out of transitional housing. And the Dakins have also started their efforts for Davis's place at work. He's been able to find a job at a hotel locally, and he's been promoted. He has also promoted the homeless man from his former part-time position to now a full-time position. And Jody says that this will be especially beneficial in keeping Davis on his feet and out of homelessness again. So there's just sort of this endless cycle of goodness that's kind of continuing for him. This story is actually, I believe it happened about 6 months ago, so I don't know the GoFundMe page. The story was just republished again this week, even though the event actually happened 6 months ago. So hopefully the GoFundMe page continues to, you know, benefit and reap benefit for Mr. Davis and really helps him get out of his circumstances, which sound like they're kind of just been unfortunate, extenuating circumstances that have kept him in a cycle of homelessness. And hopefully now that he's been able to kind of get his story out in the news, that there's some good that comes out of his Good Samaritan, his act of Good Samaritan, and people can respond in kind.
Well, I'm sure, all that goodness that he created will come back to him.
Yeah.
That's what karma happens.
Right. You know. And it sounds like it already has. I mean, it sounds like even if it stopped today, he has a car. He's now got a full-time job. He was able to put a down payment on an apartment. So it's just kind of a matter of keeping that momentum going. And hopefully he has the means to do that.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. That's a great story.
This week's the awe factor. It's life overcoming death in the most kind of unexpected and unusual of ways. So it sounds like he's very lucky to be alive. And like I said, you know, if you have to have a heart attack, I mean, even if he had had that heart attack in a hospital, the chances of his survival were not good.
We're so, not good, yeah.
Yeah. So there you go. This week's the awe factor.
Mm-hmm. And wow, what a story. All right, now let's see if these next two guys can hold up to that particular story.
I'm Juan Suarez, and let's open up Luke's Laboratory with Mr. Luke Scriven. What's up, Luke? How are you?
I am doing great.
And for all things technology, hardware, software, and things of that nature, what are we talking about this week with technology?
So this week I'm talking about something pretty exciting, which is called Relumino. And I'm thinking that probably means to re-illuminate or something along those lines. And this is a device by Samsung. Now, I'm going to say straight away that it is still in the development stages. And so it's more of a concept than an actual guaranteed product at this time. They have talked about it a bit at the Consumer Electronics Show, which has been going on this week, and there was a little bit of buzz about it last week as well. And Samsung have got a part of their company which specifically kind of develops exciting new technologies, so it's like a think tank kind of area where they just put cool stuff together and see what they can do. Now, this specific product, the Relumino product, the concept is kind of similar to some things that we've seen before and that we've talked about on this show in terms of different electronic glasses. Okay, so I know we've talked about the Iris Vision, we've talked about the eSight and the New Eyes and various things like that. So these things already exist, you know, you put these glasses on, you're able to zoom in on things, you can change the color of things and so on and so forth. So it's taken that concept, but from their concept kind of models that they've made up, they are making it much more fashionable and much more discreet. And so previously the headwear for the electronic glasses has been kind of bulky and it's kind of made you stand out and things like that. But with the Samsung one, it's really just looks like a pair of Ray-Bans, which is kind of awesome. So, and they even have different colors as well from what I've seen. So, you know, the fashion conscious can get whatever color they like the look of. So you've basically got this pair of sunglasses, and there are video screens built in on the inside, and there's a camera in the bridge. And what's happening is the glasses are taking in the image from the camera and wirelessly sending it to your smartphone. And on your smartphone, an app is then applying all sorts of different things to that image and sending it back up to the smart glasses. And so again, you're going to have these glasses on, you're going to be able to zoom in on things, you're going to be able to change the contrast of things. They have this cool feature which is making the outlines of things bolder. And so I don't know if you've ever seen animation where they have like thick black lines around the characters and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. Something similar to that kind of idea. And another thing is remapping the image to an area of the retina which has not, which, you know, still sees well, which isn't damaged. So, for example, for somebody with advanced glaucoma, who has vision loss on the peripheral, on the periphery of their vision, but the central vision is still good. With these glasses on, you can take the image and shrink it down so it fits right on that center area of the retina where the vision is still good, and different things of that nature. So it's really exciting. Like I say, it is some stuff that we've seen before, but the really good thing about this is Samsung who are making this, and Samsung, they're a huge electronics you know, developer. They have a ton of products out on the market already, smartphones, you know, in particular that people will know about, but, you know, TVs and fridges and everything else you can imagine. And a big company like Samsung getting on board with low vision technology has a lot of, you know, interesting implications. I expect that if this product does come to market, the price will be low.
Yeah, I was about to say that probably because of that, because of they're grabbing the market.
Exactly.
Things are going to be a little bit less expensive.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about the glasses, for example, with the camera in, well, I'm sure that camera is going to be cameras which they're already sourcing for their smartphones. The glasses with the screens in, the screens, I'm sure, are going to be from screens they're already sourcing for their smartphones, and they can command very good prices on those because they buy so many of them, and that allows them then to charge less for their products. And the rest of it is really being powered by a smartphone. Well, they make smartphones, and, you know, by an app. So I really think that they're going to come in at a competitive price. Plus, they have so much development power behind them. It could be, you know, absolutely groundbreaking in terms of what it can do and, you know, how well it works. So definitely something extremely exciting and one to keep an eye on. Now, unfortunately, there's no guarantee that this will come out to market. Oftentimes we see products come from companies where it's kind of a conceptual thing, but it never actually makes it to market. For example, Google Glass, that's a big one in the not too distant past, which was like that. However, I'm really hoping that they follow through on this and release a product, hopefully, you know, in the next year and a half. And I really hope it works as well as I think it will do.
This is WCPT 820 AM. I'm Juan Suarez, and we are with Luke Scriven inside of Luke's laboratory for another Saturday morning. And Luke, one, before I forget, let us also find out how they can get a hold of you for any information on any of these products or information.
Yep. So if you would like to call me, my direct telephone number is 312-997-3649. And you can also reach me by email, luke.scriven@chicagolighthouse.org.
And was there one other thing, was there any as far as customer of the week?
Oh, you're talking about customer of the week. And I do indeed have a customer of the week this week. And this is a customer that I went out to visit on Thursday. And he lives in Rockford, so I took a little drive out there. And he basically had decided that he wanted to purchase one of every different type of device and try and learn how it worked. So I took a whole kind of Christmas bag full of goodies for him to try out, and we sat at his place and we tried out an Iris Vision and a Magnalink Zip CCTV and an Orcam and a Explore 5 handheld electronic magnifier, so a bit of everything. His vision is he has macular degeneration, and his vision is deteriorating, but he's determined not to let it slow him down, so he's trying every avenue to you know, keep him doing his job and keep him being independent at home and things like that. Extremely nice guy, very friendly, very willing to give things a try, and like I say, he's not letting his vision loss stop him. So I thought he was a good customer, and I really enjoyed spending time with him.
All right, that does it for another edition of Luke's Laboratory. I'm Juan Suarez.
Nine major television networks are making some primetime and children's programs more accessible to persons with impaired eyesight. For about 4 hours a week, the networks will be providing video description, an audible narration of a program's key visual elements inserted in natural pauses of the dialogue. The description may be accessed by a television's secondary audio feature, which might be labeled SAP or Spanish, since the feature is sometimes used for a language translation. To learn about described programs shown in your area, contact your cable or satellite television provider or your local ABC, CBS, Fox, or NBC station. To learn about your equipment's secondary audio feature, contact the vendor or manufacturer. The Federal Communication Commission's information on video description is available at www.fcc.gov or by calling 1-888-225-5322.
Are you ready for kids who eat healthy? Good nutrition can lead to great things. To find out how a healthy lifestyle can help your child succeed, go to mypyramid.gov. A public service announcement brought to you by the Ad Council and USDA.
This was a slam-packed show.
More than you know.
More than you know.
More information than Carol of Informing Monkeys.
My brain is full. I need to go eat some pancakes to recharge a little bit.
Pancakes with sausage.
Well, not for me, but...
Oh, that's right. You're not a meat eater.
I'm not a meat eater.
You're a vegan.
I am, but I make some killer vegan pancakes. Sprinkle some either blueberries or some vegan chocolate chips in there. So good.
Vegan chocolate chips?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
I mean, the cocoa bean is not dairy. They process it with dairy to make milk chocolate chips, but you can make chocolate chips without dairy.
Folks, don't forget, Thursday, March 1st, Raising the Stakes for Vision, Poker and Casino Night, Chicago Lighthouse presents Poker and Casino. And just contact Lindsay Inglis, lindsay.inglis@chicagolighthouse.org to get your tickets and other information. There's lots of food, lots of poker games, and the grand prize, a $10,000 seat at the World Series of Poker main event.
I love it. And I also was able to access the GoFundMe page. It's now at $16,900 out of a $12,000 goal.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's saying all money will go toward health insurance and rent for the first year. Thank you so much for making Austin's transition even easier. So
right. That's for him, the guy who saved the guy.
On the awe factor.
In the awe factor story.
Yes. That's a gentleman who did CPR for 10 minutes, and he was a homeless gentleman, but he saved this man's life, and they have responded in kind by really essentially helping save his. So that'll wrap us up for this week. I guess we're going to be okay with weather-wise. So, you know, we're still in winter, though, so stay safe, stay warm, and that ice melts or the snow melts and turns icy, so be careful out there.
Right.
And we'll be back here next week. I'm Lainey Kleeman.
And I'm Brian Hawkins.
Have a great week.